Thank you, President Mearns. What a great crowd.
What a great crowd.
So a couple comments. First of all, I want to welcome you to Muncie, Indiana, to the beautiful Horizon Convention Center in downtown. We're so thankful that this was the location chosen, and we hope that you have a great time. I will tell you that I am very proud to be the mayor of Muncie, Indiana. And I'm very proud to be a resident and a mayor in East Central Indiana. Because quite frankly, I am confident that East Central Indiana is on a rebound. You know, I think 10, 15 years from now, East Central Indiana will not be a flyover area. And you will see why. One of the things that, and I'm just going to talk about something brief here. We are, without question, we have to admit, for 50 years, we struggled. Since 1970, we have four of our eight counties in East Central Indiana have not shown an increase in the population every 10 years. Four of our eight counties have shown none, including Delaware County. So from 1970, 1980, 1990, 2000, 2010, and even the 2020 census. Now, there have been a couple outliers, and I'm going to mention those. In the last couple of years, from 2000 to 2010, if you look at the population figures for East Central Indiana, you will find that Henry County did increase in 2000 to 2010. Unfortunately, from 2010 to 2020, we went back to all eight counties not having an increase in population. But things are changing. And I am telling you, things are changing. And part of it is the great leadership that the citizens have been electing. Now, this is my personal opinion, but that they have been electing in various cities all across East Central Indiana and in county offices all across East Central Indiana. It's changing. And let me give you a couple examples. And I'm going to stick with population. If you look at the U.S. Census estimates that they do every year based on the July estimates, we usually get them about March every year, the following year. But if you look at those, in 2021, after 50 years of declining population, what happened? Two counties, Henry County and Delaware County, saw increases in population. Yeah, it's just one year, so I didn't make a big deal about it. 2022, what happened? Two counties saw increases in population, Fayette County and Delaware County. In 2023, what happened with those U.S. government, third party, not for me, third party estimates? Three counties showed population increases. The tide is changing. Those three counties, Henry County for the second time in 3 years, Delaware County for the third year in a row, and Grant County showed a population increase. I think the tide is changing. In fact, if you look at some of these numbers, and I'm a banker by background, I like numbers, and so my wife would say, get off it, please. But I'm going to just share a couple other things. In Delaware County, in the last 3 years, we have increased population more than some very popular, some areas that have received a lot of positive attention, and rightfully so. One of those is Floyd County, which is New Albany. We've actually increased more in population in Delaware County, which is here in East Central Indiana, than in New Albany, which has the advantage of being a suburban Louisville area. We also received increased population more than Howard County. And Kokomo's had some great success. If you look at Henry and Delaware County have both increased population more than Vigo County in Terre Haute, which is where Terre Haute is. Now, I'm not tearing down anyone. I'm just trying to illustrate to the people of East Central Indiana and those who are not from East Central Indiana that the tide is changing. You want to be here. You want to live here, you want to do business here, and you want to support those who are here and elected officials. If you look at, so Fayette, Henry, and Delaware all increased more than South Bend in population in that 3-year period. Blackford, Randolph, Fayette, Henry, and Delaware increased more than Bloomington, Monroe County. They had actually, they weren't all increases. They had better results than what Monroe County had. The tide is changing in central Indiana. And all eight counties scored better than Elkhart County, LaPorte County, Miami County, just to name a few. Now, this is not a slam on anyone else. This is to build us up. We are on the right path. The citizens are electing the right people. The right people are working together with those they need to work with, creating the partnerships to make this better, to make East Central Indiana better. And I am very excited that we are about to see a bold new future for East Central Indiana. What I'm going to do now, and I don't have a great introduction for you, but I am now to turn this over to the CEO of IBJ Media. So Nathan Felton.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, President Mearns. Exciting to hear the growth story and clearly a community, a region on the rise. So thank you for sharing with that with us, Mayor. Good afternoon. It is afternoon now, right? So good afternoon and welcome to our Engage Indiana event. I'm Nate Feltman, CEO of IBJ Media, and this is our very first Engage event in East Central Indiana. We've been doing Engage events since 2016, starting in Indianapolis. For the last few years, we've taken them around the state, and we should give ourselves a round of applause because 300 people today for our first time event in East Central Indiana is fantastic. Fantastic. As I mentioned, we've been doing these events around the state. We're doing 9 this year. Muncie is new. Jeffersonville was new, but that includes this year. We'll do events just like this in Evansville, Fort Wayne, South Bend, Terre Haute, Valparaiso, West Lafayette, and Indianapolis, last but not least. I think we've got a great program. I know we do in store for you today as we build momentum across the state and understand how each region is growing, facing challenges, but grasping new opportunities. And part of today's program is it's important that you are engaging along with us. And what I mean by that is you have an opportunity to participate. And the way you do that, on your tables, on your programs, I believe, on the little tents, there's a QR code. And I hope most of you will take the QR code on your phone, take a picture of it, as you know how to use a QR code. And what you can do with that is you can ask questions of our Secretary of Commerce, whom I'll introduce shortly. But then our panel, which is a great group of regional leaders that we'll hear from following lunch. So I encourage you because I'll run out of questions quickly. So I need your help. Send me some questions. You can make them as tough as you'd like, but send me some questions. Our hope is that you walk away today more informed, inspired, excited what's happening in Muncie, what's happening in the entire East Central Indiana region. I want to recognize the wonderful music that you heard when you were walking in. Carter Brickler was performing on guitar. These are all Ball State University students, by the way. Matthew Crosby is performing on bass, and Griffin McAtee performing on the saxophone. Let's give them a round of applause. Are you guys still here? Where are you? There you are. Thank you so much. And we'll look forward to hearing more from you during our lunch, which will be served shortly. So thank you so much. Great to hear from you this morning. Speaking of lunch, we've got some great locally sourced products. Many of you will be familiar with these companies that are providing our lunch today. Dillman Farm, Fair Oaks Farm, Miller Poultry, and Steckler Grass-Fed Farms are all featured today's lunch. As you can see, if you are starving, some of you might be, there's some great snacks, cheese and crackers on the table, fruit. Help yourself before lunch is served, which will happen right after our fireside chat with our Indiana Secretary of Commerce, David Rosenberg. As I mentioned earlier, the Engage concept goes back to 2016 when we first convened business, education, philanthropy, and government leaders to discuss how we can all work together to move various regions of our state forward. We're very proud this year with the help of our partner, the Indiana Economic Development Corporation, and the other partners I'll mention shortly, to have every corner of our state touched this year with an event. This event wouldn't be possible with our partners, including I'll mention the Indiana Economic Development Corporation. As you know, that's Indiana's lead economic development agency. It's been our pleasure at IBJ Media to work alongside Secretary of Commerce David Rosenberg and his entire leadership team at IEDC as we've traveled Indiana to better understand the opportunities and challenges that are unique to each region. We'll hear from Secretary Rosenberg just in a few minutes. You know, as I said, you'll have a chance to ask him questions, so hit that QR code. And then after lunch, my colleague Gary Dick with Inside Indiana Business, part of IBJ Media, will moderate a panel of regional leaders, all of whom are committed, I know, to advancing the region's future. Before we begin, I want to recognize our Engage series sponsors who have made today and the series possible. That's CareSource, Indiana University, and Old National Bank. Here are a few words directly from our statewide Engage series sponsors.
I'm Steve Smitherman, president of CareSource Indiana. Did you know that over 60% of our nation's health is impacted by social needs like access to food, jobs, childcare, and housing? In other words, when basic needs are met, people tend to enjoy better lives and improved health. CareSource administers one of the largest Medicaid managed care plans in the United States. Here in Indiana, that includes the Healthy Indiana Plan and Hoosier HealthWise. We also provide affordable marketplace coverage to our members here in Indiana and across the country. Aside from offering excellent health benefits, we also help our members find steady jobs, healthy food, reliable childcare, and safe housing. Our success depends on a critical partnership between CareSource and Indiana business, community, and nonprofit leaders like you. That's why our relationship to the Indianapolis Business Journal and our participation in events like this are so vital. We invite you to join us to create not just better healthcare for Indiana, but better lives. At CareSource, we're reimagining health insurance.
Everyone dreams of the future. Few created. At Indiana University, we're blazing an unstoppable path of innovation. It's a path that's led our faculty and graduates to global recognition and inspired all of us to embrace the future with creativity and bravery. Undaunted by challenge, unapologetically optimistic, we're transforming the future through science, business, medicine, and the arts. We take the lead. We don't follow the crowd. Because bold is who we are. 9 campuses, 1 purpose. Creating tomorrow, today. Indiana University, bring on tomorrow. Join us at iu.edu.
Hello, I'm Jim Ryan, Chairman and CEO of Old National Bank. I'm pleased to welcome you to the 2024 Engage Indiana series, which gives business, education, and community leaders a chance to convene, connect, and advance the growth and development goals of our great state. All of us here have the same objective, to grow Indiana's economy. That's why these events take place in every region, so we can focus on each community's unique opportunities and develop plans to make Indiana a model for community growth and engagement. Thank you for being here today. I'm inspired by your willingness to share your knowledge and expertise to foster innovation and set a course for an even stronger, more successful Indiana.
Thank you to our series sponsors. I also want to recognize our partner, the Indiana Chamber of Commerce. And here are a few words from the Indiana Chamber of Commerce.
I'm Vanessa Green Cinders. I'm excited to share how the Indiana Chamber looks forward to working with you to build on Indiana's tremendous record. We hope our new economic playbook for the state, Indiana Prosperity 2035, can set the stage to further drive growth and success for Hoosiers and their enterprises. The plan focuses on 6 pillars: workforce, education, innovation, infrastructure, quality of place, and health, and seeks to mobilize consensus on key goals. It also serves as a roadmap for our advocacy efforts. We're now on a statewide tour, Partners in Prosperity, to build momentum for the implementation of Indiana Prosperity 2035. Our aim is for Indiana to rise even higher on the list of best places for businesses to operate and people to live, work, and visit. We want to gather perspective from across the state and work in partnership to drive proactive solutions. The voice of business is strong in Indiana, and together we can make it even stronger.
Thank you, Vanessa, and thank you, Indiana Chamber of Commerce. Last but not certainly least, and I'll note, I want to thank President Mearns. I want to thank Ball State, and I'll note their video, I gave them twice as much time as Indiana University. I know you all were like, what the heck is Indiana University doing? But they're our series sponsor, but our host today, of course, is Ball State, and we gave them an extra allotment of time because as a special thank you to President Mearns and to your entire staff. Your support, all the work you put into today has been crucial for to pull off a wonderful day. We had a wonderful breakfast this morning with a number of regional leaders and, of course, today's event. So thank you. And here are a few words directly from Ball State University.
At Ball State University, we strive to enhance the economic and social vitality of the communities that we serve. And that commitment has never been stronger. Since 2018, Ball State's historic partnership with Muncie Community Schools has helped to stabilize enrollment, to reward teachers and staff, and to raise millions of dollars of philanthropic support for the district. Since 2014, Ball State employees have contributed more than $1.4 million to the United Way, and they have donated thousands of volunteer hours for dozens of Day of Action projects. Last year, more than 10,000 Ball State students participated in approximately 34,000 hours of community service. And over the past 23 years, Ball State students and faculty have engaged in more than 3,500 immersive learning projects focused on finding solutions for our partners in the community. Our dedication to excellence is evident in the accomplishments we celebrate today. This past year, our graduates and our benefactors contributed more than $79 million to the university, an all-time fundraising record for Ball State. These funds will fuel our ambitious initiatives, including our new Performing Arts Center, which is the catalyst for our plan to revitalize the village. Our student success stories are equally inspiring. Again this year, we are welcoming a large, diverse, and academically accomplished freshman class. We're also seeing increased retention rates, and we have grown our academic programs to meet the evolving needs of our students and our state. At Ball State, our mission is to prepare our students for fulfilling careers and to lead meaningful lives. We also serve our neighbors, our communities, and our state. We challenge ourselves and we challenge our students to reach new heights, driven by our enduring values and a spirit of collaboration. Together, we're shaping a brighter future for our community and the people whom we serve. And so with every step forward, we are proud to say that at Ball State University, we fly.
Thank you again, President Mearns. It is now my pleasure to kick off our program with Indiana Secretary of Commerce, David Rosenberg. David Rosenberg has served as Secretary of Commerce for the state of Indiana and member of Governor Eric Holcomb's cabinet since his appointment a little over a year ago, August of 2023. He leads the Indiana Economic Development Corporation, guiding the strategy, supporting the growth of the state's economy and its economic development efforts. Secretary Rosenberg joined the IEDC in August 2021. Prior to becoming Secretary of Commerce, he served as IEDC's Chief Operating Officer and Chief of Staff. Secretary Rosenberg leads a 100-person international team that, under the leadership of Governor Holcomb, has achieved unprecedented success for Indiana's economy. Last year, Indiana scored record economic development commitments of $29 billion, that's with a B, breaking the record set in 2022. And the Holcomb administration secured historic levels of economic development funding from the state legislature. As you will hear, Indiana is once again having an historic year. I'm going to save all the good stuff for our Secretary of Commerce to share. David Rosenberg previously served as Deputy Chief of Staff under former Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard, where he oversaw the management of development projects worth billions of dollars and represented the city at the State House. Before that, he worked in the education sector, where he served as an operations officer for the Indianapolis Public Schools, the largest school district in the state. He's been recognized as one of India's 250 most influential leaders by IBJ Media. He's a graduate of Indiana University and the Indiana University Maurer School of Law in Bloomington. And he resides in Zionsville with his wife, Allie, and their children, Will, Lily, and Jack. Please welcome Indiana Secretary of Commerce, David Rosenberg.
Thank you, Nate. Thank you all for being here today. It's incredibly special. Could not be more thrilled to be in Muncie as we continue the incredible Engage series with the IBJ. I am a Hoosier, born and raised. I went to IU for undergrad law school. As I told Mayor Morrell, I did meet my wife in law school, so not all was lost, but I did quickly realize I did not want to be an attorney in any way. I've worked in local government, education, and business, but let me tell you, there is no better time than right now to be the state Secretary of Commerce. I was appointed just over 1 year ago by Governor Holcomb. And each and every day I wake up thinking about how we can build the state, not just for the next few years, but for the next 50, the next 100. And it's truly personal to me. The state has given me so much. And I have three kids, all five and under. I want my kids and all Hoosier children to not only choose to stay in Indiana, but to have every opportunity to be successful here and to reinvest here. I want Indiana to provide the in-demand jobs, the vibrant communities, and the quality of life that they want and that they deserve. I want to help build the economy of the future here and create true generational change that'll still be seen and felt decades from now. And that's why I'm so excited about what we're doing at the state level, because our economy is stronger than ever. Just over 2 years ago, the IDC moved from a transactional organization to a strategic one, meaning we weren't just going to sit back and see who called us and said, we want to come to Indiana. We're going to go get the economies we wanted for our future, those industries that are moving the world into the future. And this focus on growing these economies in the future has led to unprecedented success for the state. In the first 12 years of the IDC, the state had a total of about $49.5 billion of committed capital investment. In just the last 11 quarters, we've had over $88 billion of committed investment. 12 years versus 11 quarters. Back to back to back record years. And the momentum isn't stopping. Q1 this year was the largest quarter in state history. We brought in another $7 billion in Q2. And we'll have more great news to share about Q3 yet this week. The best is yet to come. Indiana is the place to do business for the next decade. Due to reshoring and modernization and the geopolitical uncertainty around the world, there is nearly $1 trillion of investment looking for a place to land in the next decade. These companies aren't going to the coast due to the instability, the high costs, the lack of workforce. They're truly looking at the Midwest and the Southeastern states. But why not Indiana? Why shouldn't we be able to go get more than our fair share of that investment? We have the talent. We have the educational institutions. We have the global leaders and global companies. We have an ease of doing business and an ease of living. We have the community. Thanks to the new and renewed tools from the state legislature, we're helping business answer that why invest in Indiana question. And in return, they're helping us set those records. As Nate mentioned, in 2023, companies here and around the world committed to investing in Indiana for a total of $28.7 billion. These committed investments are expected to create nearly 22,000 new high-paying jobs with an average annual salary of approximately $75,000 per year, the highest committed wages and capital investment in IDC's history. And over 71% of last year's investment came from foreign direct investment. Indiana is truly an international player. All of this success and momentum at the state level would not be possible without the efforts and the partnership of our local communities and our regions, like right here in East Central. Since 2017, companies have committed to invest more than $2.26 billion to locate and grow their operations in the East Central region, planning to create nearly 6,600 new jobs. The region continues to be a competitive destination for agribusiness, ag biosciences, and food and beverage products. In Van Buren, Weaver Popcorn is investing $37.5 million to update and expand its state-of-the-art packaging, food processing, and production, solidifying Indiana's place as the number two location for popcorn. In Richmond, Blue Buffalo is in the midst of yet another expansion, investing $200 million with plans to create 60 new jobs, while Richmond Beverage Solutions just announced plans to expand and modernize its dairy operations, investing $44.8 million in the Hoosier State. And last year, companies like Liberation Labs and Nova Circular Solutions made plans to locate new operations in East Central, investing over $250 million in Richmond and Connersville, respectively. And they're not alone. Across the region, companies continue to pick East Central Indiana to locate and grow their businesses and create new jobs because you have worked so hard to create the best possible economic climate and the best possible communities to support them. But it's not just companies investing here. It's the state and the regions investing in itself. East Central is leading that charge. No other state is doing anything like our Ready program. In partnership with the Lilly Endowment, thanks to Governor Holcomb's leadership and the leadership of our legislature, the state is investing $1.25 billion in population growth and quality of place initiatives. This is expected to leverage over $20 billion of outside capital for projects in all 92 counties. This community has taken that collaboration and regionalism to heart. Through Ready One and Ready Two, we're allocating $50 million to the East Central region. And that number increased by $20 million between round one and round two. Because of your hard work, we know that the state funding will drive projects to bring more residents to Indiana and make this region an even better place to live. In addition to community investments, we're investing unprecedented amounts into Indiana's innovation. Indiana was one of three states to win all three of the federal hub awards, Microelectronics Commons, Tech Hubs, and Hydrogen Hubs. There was a 0.1% chance that any state would win all three of those, and Indiana did it. These hubs will bring tens of millions of dollars in federal funding to attract companies and talent in these critical future-focused industries. And we're seeing this collaborative effort pay off already. Just last month, we learned that one of our tech hubs, the Heartland Bioworks, has unlocked approximately $51 million in federal funding to accelerate talent development, innovation, and business launches in biomanufacturing and life sciences. And not only that, we're future-proofing Indiana's largest sector, manufacturing, by helping businesses invest in new technologies and automation to improve efficiencies and increase production. Through our Manufacturing Readiness Grant Program, we've awarded 27 grants to businesses here in the East Central region, investing more than $2.7 million to accelerate projects that will help businesses like Hullett Foods, HyFlex Corporation, Midwest Metal Products, Mersix, Petoskey Plastics, Pivot Manufacturing, and Wiley Metal Manufacturing grow now and for years to come. Our investment is being matched by those businesses, resulting in at least $5.4 million invested in smart manufacturing equipment and this region's manufacturing sector. And it's not just manufacturing, though. We've nearly tripled our investment into entrepreneurship, leading the state being the number 12 most active VC in the world. We rank as the number two place to start a business by Forbes. And we've been recognized as the top 40 emerging ecosystem for entrepreneurship by Startup Genome. We continue to see consistent growth in all our entrepreneurial ecosystems. In this region alone, our Small Business Development Center has served over 726 entrepreneurs and small businesses since the beginning of 2023. This no-cost support has helped launch 62 new businesses, generate $13.2 million in capital infusion, and support more than 2,100 jobs at small businesses throughout East Central Indiana. So in closing, let me extend my sincerest gratitude to you all. Thank you for the partnership in elevating Indiana's economy and in cultivating our communities. Thank you for investing in our workforce and our talent pipeline. And thank you for all that you do to make Indiana even better for our future generations. We're incredibly excited about what's in store for Indiana, and we're grateful for your partnership in building a future-focused economy right here at home. Thank you all.
numerous jobs and infrastructure projects underway in virtually every corner of the state.
A major investment in its East Central Indiana operation.
Lilly's investment believed to be the largest of its kind in the United States.
Northeast Indiana will receive a $50 million grant as the state continues to spur economic development.
Obviously, ladies and gentlemen, I don't need to tell you, but I'm proud to. The state of our state is strong.
Indiana is on fire. We're shattering records. The IDC has secured over $70 billion of committed capital investment.
Indiana continues to put up some big economic development numbers.
A Fisher's battery recycler has big plans for the old RCA Thompson plant in Marion.
With this tiny nail-sized chip, we are going to change the world, and the great state of Indiana will be in the center of the change.
Liberation Labs will invest $115 million.
Meta is looking at a 700,000 square foot facility in Jeffersonville.
Record investment and jobs numbers.
More than 230 new jobs in Hamilton County.
Officials are optimistic. This is just the beginning.
$1 billion in private capital investment in a little over 2 years. Big validation for Indiana's biotech movement as the federal government designated Indiana one of about 30 regional biotech hubs. Total investment of $9 billion and 900 jobs.
Today, the state of Indiana announced the recipients of Ready 2.0 funding, and local counties are getting millions of dollars.
A small community in East Central Indiana has some big plans to become a destination for arts and entertainment.
$500 million to launch Ready 2.0 to lock in more transformational projects.
Your third trip in as many years to Japan.
The U.S. state of Indiana has opened an office in Taipei.
This week, 1,000 business leaders, lawmakers, and delegates representing 30 different countries are right here in Indianapolis.
Indiana is done being humble. We are tenacious. We are relentless. We are bold in our pursuit of innovation and building a global economy of the future, creating more opportunities for Hoosiers to prosper and succeed.
Indiana is done being humble. I like that.
Spreading the message around the world.
I love it. So you've been... David, you've been Secretary of Commerce now a little over a year, and as you mentioned, last year was a record-breaking year with nearly $29 billion in capital investment and 22,000 new jobs. And this year, it sounds like things are going pretty well. You said, where are we at from a capital investment perspective this year?
Currently sit at about $32 billion of investment through last Friday, and we're hoping to get a few more in before we go to our board on Thursday for those approvals. So it's been another incredible year, both in terms of capital investment, but wages continue to stay at a high level. Currently, we're tracking about $37.31 per hour for the jobs that we invest in, almost $77,000 per year, 10% higher than the U.S. national average. So both in terms of the capital investment that companies making, but also those high-wage careers, not just jobs, but high-wage careers for Hoosiers is really what our team's been focused on.
What factors would you attribute? I mean, these are astronomical numbers. Back in the day, I used to be in your spot, and as you had to point out, unfortunately, that we were at $8.7 billion, back in the day, and now you're 3x or 4x that. What is driving these massive investments?
Yeah, so I think it's about 3 years ago, as I mentioned, thanks to the leadership of Governor Holcomb, our legislature, my predecessor, Brad Chambers, we really looked at where the market was going. And we felt very strongly that if we were going to invest public dollars, taxpayer dollars into these deals, they really needed to be careers that weren't just here for the next 5 years. They needed to be here for the next 50 years or longer, really generational investments that the state was making to help communities all across the Hoosier state, but also focused on those high paying jobs. I think there's some schools of maybe disagreement, but the state should not be investing in $15, $18 an hour jobs. Those have absolute value and the communities are absolutely needed. But if we're using your hard earned dollars to bring companies here, we need to lift everyone up. We need to make it aspirational. And so again, we truly took it from a transactional organization, just sitting back, seeing who would call us, to more of a strategic. We wanted to go get those industries that would help our economy over the next 5, 6, 7 decades and really drive where we need to go.
And that took a lot of courage by political leaders, because we say no to a hell of a lot of deals now. If someone comes in and it's either low wage, below the county average, or is not in one of these industries of the future, it's generally something that we're not going to incentivize. And so being very strategic about the industry sectors that we're looking at really helped tell the market, this is where we're going. Combine that coming out of COVID with reshoring and modernization, a lot of the geopolitical tension. When you look at the federal programs, whether it be like IRA, CHIPS, IIJA, I think that accelerated some of the timelines for companies as well when they wanted to make those investments. So since we were already being strategic in these industries, we had a lot of those macroeconomic worldwide factors that came to be. And that all kind of had a confluence of events that really benefited us. And just years of strong leadership, having a low cost of business doing state, a great tax base, great educational institutions and partnerships. All of that really led where we could go play offense and bring in those industries of the future, those big industries that we need to grow our state for the long term.
No, that's great information. And remember, I've got an iPad. I'm getting questions, so send more if you've got them, and I'll ask David. So you mentioned these jobs that are coming. Of course, they take time to get into the ground to build the facilities, and there's a lot coming from foreign direct investment. But you mentioned they're really higher wage. They're higher wage than Indiana historically. They're higher wage than what the IEDC has done historically. And they're also higher, if I got it right, they're also higher than the national average. How do you go about targeting? I thought it was interesting you said we are not going to maybe work with some of the lower wage jobs, which is a important strategy. How do you go about targeting the higher wage jobs?
Yeah, it's really about setting that tone of the market. And again, saying no early on. And so when we, you know, when we had consultants come to us for $15 $18 an hour, warehousing jobs, again, great value in those jobs, mean a lot to the person that has those communities. But we wanted to bring more of the aspirational, entities and industries into the state. And, that was a shift. And we had a lot of angry letters written and a few calls from legislators, but, you know, it was the right thing to do. Again, if we're using taxpayer dollars, I think we need to look to lift up people and really, generate those different industries that we haven't had in the state. When you look at something like semiconductors, I don't think anyone really knew what a semiconductor was before COVID. And now it's all the buzz. We had some, but since 2022, we've had seven new semiconductor companies locate in Indiana, including a $3.8 billion investment by SK Hynix. We've had three, Samsung SDI has three battery factories in the United States. All three are in Indiana for a total of about $9 billion. These new industries are great because they're not only a great initial splash with high wage jobs, but they bring their entire supply chain as well. And so even if it isn't with a Samsung SDI, their entire supply chain brings continued jobs and investments, but it also helps the communities throughout, whether it be new amenities for Kokomo. Again, $6 billion from Samsung SDI, thousands of South Korean workers coming in. They went from zero Korean restaurants to six. And the mayor touts that fact everywhere he goes. It also helps small businesses, whether everything from catering to products that can supply the factory. So as we look at these new industries, there's huge downstream effect that has a positive impact in the lives of Hoosiers every day. And again, I think shooting higher, trying to run faster, be a little bit more aspirational, being open to those type of businesses has really benefited us so far.
I'm getting lots of good questions now. Some of them are going to be better for the panel. And I'll mention a couple of those before we head off stage, but I'll save them for Gary to ask the panel. There's some good ones. But this is one that is from the audience. What's the best strategy for East Central Indiana to deploy to compete with the donut counties of Indianapolis? That's an interesting question. And any immediate thoughts that come to your mind?
Yeah, first want to give huge kudos to Trevor, who's led the East Central region through the Ready process. We knew for this region, you know, Ready One was tough. It was kind of the first time all these groups have come together, and we saw some of those growing pains. But then when you look from a $15 million award in Ready One up to a $35 million in Ready Two, you see the growth, you see the potential. You combine that with the Lilly Endowment and their college and community grants that they gave out. And I think four different, maybe five different universities in this region alone received those And that's universities tearing down their ivory towers, reaching out to communities, building those collaboration. So I think it's a false comparison. I don't think you want to look at just the donut counties. Trust me, they have their own issues they're working through. Certainly benefits, but their own issues as well. But what I think is really exciting about this region is, as Mayor Ridenour said, the right people are at the right table at the right time to really tackle what the future can look like. When you look at, as we talked about at breakfast this morning, that the eds and meds strategy and what is going on with the anchor institutions all throughout the region, it's a really exciting time. I think the right leaders are at the table, the community support there, but there's going to be a lot of growth to come. And so I wouldn't compare it to one region or the other. You have a different set of assets than anyone else does. But I think continuing to market yourselves, lean into industry education partnerships, those are key. How do you create that stickiness from the K-12 level through university to industry? I think going to be absolutely critical as you look to continue to grow your population.
So this is a question regarding foreign direct investment. And of course, the governor has made lots. I think he's been the most prolific governor in Indiana's history in terms of the trips abroad to meet with CEOs of companies that could invest in America, could invest in Indiana. You just came back from Taiwan, I believe. Of course, Taiwan is central to the chip microelectronics and chip manufacturing. Could you talk a little bit? The question was really more geared towards, that focus exclude in some ways the homegrown companies, and how do you work with homegrown companies as well? But maybe just talk a little bit about Indiana's foreign direct investment strategy and then how that balances out with the efforts you have with homegrown companies.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question. So the importance of creating those international relationships cannot be understated. You have to be there. You have to be present. These things can't be done over Zoom. And again, as I said, with some of the federal programs, I think that really accelerated the timeline for some of these international companies about when they would make their U.S. investment. And if you don't have those relationships, if you don't, if you're not marketing yourselves in those industries, it's going to be really hard to capture those. So the strategy of being able to go out and sit in front of, a CEO or an industry group and tout the benefits of Indiana when others aren't doing that, that gives us a huge leg up. We saw that with SK Hynix as one example. The governor made his first trip to South Korea in 2019. We were not on their list of potential recipients of the RFP once they were looking to make their U.S. move. We got on that list. We were probably one of six or so, and it took getting them to Indiana to see what we were talking about in person. But again, we wouldn't have even had that chance had we not made that trip to Korea and sat in front of them to tell our story and be in front. So it's a huge need, especially in Asian countries. Our relationship with Japan goes back decades. We have over 300 Japanese companies operating in Indiana. Since 2019, we've had nearly $15 billion of investment from South Korea. We just opened our office in Taiwan, and there's huge opportunity and growth strategy there. So being present is absolutely essential. However, it does not detract from what we're doing with our already existing Hoosier businesses that are looking to continue to grow in the state. When you look at the number of deals we do, 70% of the deals we do in any given year are with existing Indiana businesses. And that means so much to me because, again, it shows that they have the workforce, they have the success, they have the path to profitability to continue to operate in the state. 80% of the deals we do are with small and medium-sized businesses. So I know the billion-dollar deals often get the headlines and you see those on the news. No offense, Nate or Gary, but you see those on the news, but the day-to-day work our team does is with local companies, Hoosier-grown companies, and small and medium-sized businesses, and that's where our focus will continue to be. 99% of businesses in Indiana are small businesses, and we know that's the backbone of the economy, about $11 billion to the state's GDP every year. So we know that's the backbone. That's where a lot of our focus is. The great thing is it doesn't have to be an either-or. I think our team has shown that we can successfully do it all, get the big wins, the multi-billion dollar deals, while still making those strong investments and giving current companies a pathway to grow.
I mean, the reality is that the chip manufacturing business, one that's important to all of us that are in our cell phones and in the laptops, our iPads, keep going down the list, cars. The reality is that industry left America, decades ago. And then the federal government, as we all know, put a lot of dollars out there to incentivize that onshoring, these businesses to come back. So you mentioned SK Hynix. So those businesses were going to come to America because the federal government is putting out this huge pot of money. They're going to come to America. So, of course, we want Indiana to be there as the place where these investments occur, because it's not just that investment. It's also that know-how, the talent, right, that's needed. Talent's coming out of our universities that can go work. So it makes sense that we would want to be in line for that investment opportunity, that it's going to go somewhere in America. Why not in Indiana, right?
Without question. And them coming again is a benefit to the entire region, entire state, because everything from the supply chain, from wiring companies to glass companies to anyone who provides their supply chain to even the end users. You know, we have now all four of the big data companies announced in Indiana operating, investments in billions of dollars to the next generation of AI. They're end users, but then you look at OEMs. As Nate said, everything we use has those microchips. And so creating that ecosystem here in the state benefits everyone, opens up more opportunities. But then you also get, from the mom and pop restaurants to the dry cleaners to everything in those areas, also get a big boost because you're bringing hundreds and hundreds of new residents to the state from outside the country, and they need those amenities. And so winning those is a huge deal from a marketing standpoint internationally and to attract other companies. But it also benefits people right there in that town, in that region, every day just by the day-to-day transactions that will occur.
This is a question you probably can't answer, but it's a fun one to think about. In January, this is from the audience. In January 2025, regardless of the results of this election, we will see a new executive administration at the state and federal level. This is asking for your opinion. You got to share your opinion. In your opinion, how is this change going to affect the economic health of the region and the state? Any predictions or thoughts?
It's a great question, and I'll try not to get in trouble. I think we've prided ourselves in Indiana is that no matter what the change is, we're focused on supporting each other, supporting the ecosystem. And so we've had, now three different governors, from Mitch Daniels to Mike Pence to Governor Holcomb, with seamless transitions into, if a business deal was existing previously, it continued to the next administration. There's great leadership at the legislative level by Speaker Houston and Senator Bray. That gives companies a lot of confidence in continuing to make those investments in the stable business environment that we offer here. And I think they've committed, and we bring them in on different pitches, and they continue to commit that that'll be their focus, to ensure there is a stable, known operating environment, low cost, low tax environment that they can. At the federal level, we've worked really well with whether it's a Democrat administration or a Republican administration, because our focus is, what do our business need to be successful? And so we do not play the political game. We have a federal engagement team, obviously great representation at the federal level, Senator Young with the CHIPS Act and our congressional delegation. But we don't wade into those waters because it doesn't benefit, our clients, which are the businesses that we're trying to represent. And so our goal is to make sure that they have an opportunity to get the resources, get the connections, and have the success in the state they need, and do that. We have to be able to work with both sides, which I'm very proud to say we've been able to do for several administrations now.
That was a very politically correct answer. Good job. I know you guys are hungry, and I am running out of time. So we'll end it with this audience question. But Gary, there are a ton of good questions in here from the audience. You guys get an A, absolutely, for asking some great questions, because there are a ton that I couldn't get to. But I hope, Gary, you are able to. This is the last one. It's kind of a fun one. What has been one of your favorite projects to see created that you've been a part of? If you could think about, a favorite project and why it was your favorite project so far. You've been there at the IDC for a little over 3 years, right? So you've been involved in many. Is there one that you say stands out because it was difficult or it was unique or anything that stands out?
No, it's a great question. I think the one thing I'm most proud of is the team and culture that we've built, not only with our IDC team, but then also the partnerships that have been created with both the Ritos and Litos throughout the state. Good economic development projects only happen if there is that partnership. And that took a concerted effort and investment into our team, and then also from our team working with the regions, not just trying to be the heavy hand of the state coming down, but truly wanting to know what works at the local level, what doesn't. And it's different all across the state. And so that's been great to see. I do think the Ready Project will have generational impact, not just for the projects that it helps fund, which I think will be many and be impactful, but because of that regional collaboration that it has kind of driven and required in some instances to receive that funding. And I think this region is a great example of that. I think, no matter what the next administration looks like, no matter what they do, this region has really come together. And I think there's a lot of different opportunities, whether it be on business development, whether it be federal programs, whether it be, working internally with the community that will be able to drive a lot of that future for this region. So I think the impact of Ready will be generational. And again, it's because of those collaboration, those partnerships that have been created.
Well, thank you, David, for sharing your thoughts and for all that you've been doing for our state. Let's give David a round of applause. Thank you.
Thank you.
Nate, thank you very much for that introduction and good afternoon, everyone. It's a real treat to be in East Central Indiana for our Engage series. As Nate said, this is the fourth of nine we're doing this year, our first trip here. And we're excited to be here. And President Mearns, there you are. Thank you to you and your team for being great hosts for this event. It's been very great to welcome us to the community. And I want to give a shout out to our local media sponsor, and I know they are here today, the MuncieJournal.com, WMUN, and Wolf Boom Radio as well. And big round of applause. You're very fortunate as a region to have a local media ownership. That's so important. It doesn't exist everywhere. Telling the stories of economic development and business here in the region is very important indeed. So thanks for the sponsorship and the support for that. The stories they're covering, the stories we're covering, I think are of a region in transition here. Companies that built the region over the years are gone and the jobs left as well. But new companies and new names and new manufacturing processes, new industries are coming into the region in a big way. I think about Canpack, Poland-based company, had lots of places they could locate. They chose Delaware County to locate a plant that I think has 300 plus employees now. That number continues to grow. You look around the region, with clusters of companies in food processing, in animal food production in the Richmond area as well. Lots of different kinds of companies coming into the region. And as President Mearns mentioned, lots of money coming into the region as well when you think of the Ready 2.0 money, as well as the big dollars coming in for projects or initiatives that will connect, in this case, Ball State and Muncie, but also Taylor and Upland and their community, Indiana Wesleyan, Earlham also getting substantial dollars from Lilly Endowment for really potentially transformational projects that, again, stand to transform the region. So we'll talk about that and a lot more, see if we can get some scoop out of these people as to what's next here in the Muncie region, a great panel that we have assembled for that discussion. We begin on my immediate right with Elizabeth Roray. Elizabeth is president and CEO of the Greater Muncie Chamber of Commerce, also state representative for District 35 here. Next to Elizabeth, we have Lafay Pegues. Lafay, not only are an entrepreneur, president and CEO of John Tom's Barbecue, but also a radio host. It was great to be on your radio show yesterday on WMUN here. We also have a mayor with us. Ronald Morrell Jr. is mayor of the city of Marion, another city in transition. Got a lot of things going on in that community. President Mearns, again, thank you for being on the panel and indeed for your support of all we're doing here. We also have Mark Hardwick. Mark is the CEO of First Merchants Bank, really a growing entity, not only here in Indiana, but elsewhere as well. And last but certainly not least is Trevor Friedeberg. Trevor is the president and CEO of the East Central Indiana Regional Partnership. So with that, and as our host, I'll start with you, President Burns. Give us your perception from Ball State's perspective of where the region stands. Muncie, but more broadly, the East Central Indiana region has faced its challenges, but there are lots of indications of momentum going on in the region.
Yeah, so thank you, Gary. So my perception, Jennifer and I, we moved here in May of 2017, and clearly over the last 7 years, we've seen the continued upward trajectory of Muncie, Delaware County, and the entire East Central Indiana region. As you said, there are challenges, and many of those challenges remain. But because of the existing assets that we have in the region, institutions like ours, the other educational institutions you just described, we're very fortunate in Muncie, Delaware County, and the region to have local foundations that are very strong, Ball Brothers Foundation, George and Francis Ball Foundation, the Community Foundation. So we have the assets, if we work together, to make the investments necessary to continue the growth towards economic vitality and prosperity for all of the people that we serve in East Central Indiana.
As a follow-up to that, if you would give folks an idea, if maybe they haven't heard, but the money for Lilly Endowment for this initiative and some of the big projects, including the Village, and how that's Performing Arts Center is part of that as well, and how that can be a transformational project, really change things.
Yeah, so I'll speak about the Village maybe in just a moment, but I think it's important for everyone in this room. The mayor, I think, did a fine job earlier this afternoon to talk about the momentum. The Lilly Endowment created this campus and community collaboration initiative. They set aside $300 million to invest in institutions and community around the state. And our region, with the four institutions that you mentioned, garnered $120 million of that $300 million. The Lilly Endowment, as we all know, is very generous, but they're also very strategic. And so the programs that they chose to invest in demonstrated that they had great confidence that their investment would produce a great return for the communities that we serve. Our specific project received the largest investment. That's the Village Revitalization Plan. We have a performing arts center, a state-of-the-art performance venue. We'll have about 160 to 170 performances by our students in our Department of Theater and Dance. We also will host performances from other community arts organizations. Immediately adjacent to the Performing Arts Center will be a new boutique hotel. It'll be the nicest hotel between Indianapolis and Fort Wayne. It will also, and this is very important to several members of the university and the hospital community, will have the only rooftop bar and lounge in East Central Indiana. So it'll be a popular place for not only guests to stay, but for our employees to gather after work. Then we'll have a Center for Innovation, which is a great program that will connect our students and our academic programs with emerging businesses and entrepreneurs in our community. Owner-occupied housing, we want to continue to support the revitalization of the Riverside Normal neighborhood. And we're grateful, as I said, grateful for the support from the mayor and the city council for also their investment. It's about a $200 million project.
Wow. Substantial. Mark, you mentioned earlier, you think that project and that initiative can make Muncie go from a town with a college to a cool college town, right? How important is that for a private sector company to attract and keep people?
Yeah, I mean, we're all trying to attract the best talent possible. And to have Muncie be a place that is really exciting to live and work, where you can have an incredibly fulfilling career and also feel like you can raise your children in a place that where there's lots of opportunity and you can also have fun. It matters. And there are great examples around the country of really vibrant, exciting college towns that are attraction points for families, really. And so I'm excited about the growth that we've experienced in downtown. The enhancements, the vacancy rate is incredibly low. Our occupancy rate is incredibly high. We have apartments going up in multiple locations. We have the new YMCA, which is going to be on Muncie Central's campus with a $33 million capital campaign that we were able to achieve in this community. And when I just think about the revitalization of the Village, downtown and Ball State are only about a mile apart. And it's just one more way to try to connect this community and our downtown with the university, where we have so much momentum.
Give folks just 30 seconds, real quick, thumbnail description of First Merchants, because I don't know if everybody knows how substantial a business you are and have become. $18 billion bank, that's big time.
Yeah, if you think about when deregulation happened and banks started consolidating, the state was late to that game. And so most of the largest banks in the state of Indiana were all acquired. They're acquired by National City and Huntington and others. And so we kind of had to start over. And First Merchants, when I first arrived in the late 90s, was a $1 billion in asset bank. And now we're $18 billion in total assets. We made $11 million that year, and we made $220 million last year. We had 200 employees, and now we have 2,100. So it's exciting to be part of the Central Indiana. $14 billion of our $18 billion in assets is in the state of Indiana, mostly Indianapolis and north. And then we have $3 billion in Detroit and another billion in Columbus, Ohio.
Elizabeth, economic development, that's what you do on a daily basis. What's the biggest challenge you think facing East Central Indiana, maybe other regions like East Central Indiana, as you go about trying to keep businesses here, but also attract new investment in?
For sure. I think that the largest challenge facing economic development anywhere in the globe right now are actually two issues, workforce development and so our workforce and housing issues. I actually was just reading an article a couple of weeks ago that London, and the outskirts of London, is having an issue with workforce and housing. And I think that that's pretty indicative, obviously, of Delaware County, East Central Indiana, and the state of Indiana, and again, on a global perspective. So those are biggies for us. I assumed my day job 2 years ago with economic development in the chamber, and I expressed to the board at that point in time 2 years ago that in my mind going forward, there is no economic development without workforce development. So I'm really excited about what we're doing here in Delaware County with the Cradle to Career program that we have. That's being generated out of the George and Francis Ball Foundation. They've done a tremendous amount of work on that. I tell my husband all the time, I love what they're doing there because that's the long game. That's the workforce development for us on the long game and the work that's being done there. By the time those folks in our community that are on the Cradle part of it are in the workforce, we'll be gone. We'll be in our heavenly home. We're not going to be here anymore. But it's the long game of determining how our workforce is going to be educated. And we talked earlier this morning about what's going to be the workforce of the future and trying to determine what that's going to be for your communities, wherever you are around the United States. So I would say workforce and housing, and they go hand in hand. It's hard to attract people into your community if they don't have anywhere to live. And then it's also difficult to attract people to live here if there's not job opportunities for them. Chicken egg.
Yep, housing and workforce development in a second. Lafay, you grew up here, right? You are now an entrepreneur here with your great barbecue that I'm going to try when I get home. But as you look at what's going on in Muncie and East Central Indiana, your perspective as someone who's grown up here, talk a little bit about the change and what you're seeing and the support. Do you get the support you feel you need as a young, a growing company, a growing entrepreneur?
Sure. So I was very intentional about moving back home to start this business. I was a journalist by trade and moved back here in 2006 to start my business. I think the fortunate thing about moving away from home and then moving back is that I've moved back with a different set of lenses. To really be able to see the progress that was happening, not only in Muncie, but East Central Indiana. I often say that, we're kind of raised, and I'm trying to do my part in changing this narrative, but we're kind of raised here to think if you leave Muncie, you've made it. It's like that's the end goal, is to graduate high school and then get out of here. I moved away. I went to college. I went to IU and started moving around for my career. And in that time, I started my family, wife and three kids, and priorities were different. And so when I moved back to Muncie, and because I had moved around, I had something to compare it to. And, I realized that, man, Muncie really has some great assets and some great things about it that, as an 18-year-old kid, I didn't see. But what was interesting at the time I spent away from Muncie is every time we would come home, especially downtown Muncie, we would see the changes. We would see the incremental changes. Every time we came home, there's a new restaurant popping up and all these storefronts that were vacant I mean, when I graduated high school, didn't go downtown. There was nothing down there. Pigeons, a lot of pigeon poop. But, you know, everything was, you know, all the storefronts were empty. And, you know, over those years of living away from Muncie, and every time we came home for, you know, Christmas or Thanksgiving, there was something new. And I was like, man, there's really something going on in this area. And so when we moved back, I mean, downtown was very vibrant. And as Mark said, you know, the occupancy rate was up and all the facades were new and fresh. And so those, you know, I've seen the progress and where it was and where it is now. And really we should be very proud of what we've done as far as support. You know, I didn't know. When I moved back to start this business, I was looking for family support, not necessarily thinking business. But as I've been in business, you know, I have leaned heavily on the assets that are here and are available. One being Ball State University. My company, very early on after we started, we did the immersive learning with Ball State, where they took us on for a semester. Students did. Gray gave us some awesome deliverables that we implemented into our company. The innovation connector and what Ted Baker is doing with that and being able to get programming and mentorship from there. There are some great things as an entrepreneur that, that are here that we rely on.
Change, transition seem to be operative words. That includes in Marion. Right, Mayor? You've got a number of projects going on, mixed-use development, I know we covered recently. And you mentioned earlier to me a real focus in terms of workforce and kind of what the niche you want to create in Marion.
Yeah, so for the longest time, you know, in Marion, people's success was to go to high school, graduate, some not, and go work right at RTA or one of the other factories. And with those factories now being closed for 20 years, most of my life, these factories have been closed. We have to start creating an environment for our residents to develop skills. So I partnered with our local Ivy Tech. So anyone who graduates from Marion High School will have the opportunity to go to Ivy Tech and study trades for free. And it's called the Marion Scholarship. So we want to be able to encourage this next generation of residents in our city to get some skills. So we're not dependent upon these major companies, because they may come and go. We want to have skills that we can always be able to earn money and earn a living.
So it's Center for Trade Skilled Workers, right? Talk about, if you could briefly, the big project you recently announced, or I think it was going through the approval process in terms of the mixed-use project downtown.
Yeah, so we recently established a riverfront district, like Muncie and other cities have, and we use this to be able to incentivize housing to move into the city of Marion. So we had a housing study done and shown that we were about 2,000 units short, and we put that out there, and we were able to get a big mixed-use development, $10.8 million. And we got that done in 6 months in my first year, so I'm very proud of that. And it's going to be transformational for our downtown and our city.
Okay, Trevor, we talked about housing, workforce, talent, all these big issues. You have been a point person for the Ready 2.0 process here at the Regional Economic Development Group. You got the money. What are the projects? Can you give folks a little scoop here on what we might see that money, where that money might be deployed?
Yeah, so we're still working through the process, which I feel like is what I've said for like the last 2 years straight as we've been going through this. But it's true. I mean, there is a process that we have to respect if we're going through it. But a couple things I'll say about Ready before I get into any projects or touching on that is that first and foremost, I mean, we're incredibly thankful to the IDC, Governor Holcomb, Secretary Rosenberg, everyone who's been involved in rolling out a program like that that allows regions to have some control over their fate, to come together to say, these are the things that we think are important, and elevate those things and say, okay, this is what we need. We understand. We got the boots to the ground. This is what we want to advance forward. So thank you so much. I can't say it again, how impactful that program really is. And even a step beyond that, just with Ready One, yes, we got a $15 million investment through Ready One. And what's more important, I think, than even the dollars that are invested is what you can see in the community. You see cranes, you hear cement mixers. It gives people that spark. It gives people more hope that there are things on the horizon that we are worth the investment and that if we keep our heads down and keep working at it, we can get things done. I didn't answer your question at all.
We're in the political season, you know, so it's,
yeah. Next question. So the types of projects that we're looking at, something that was very critical for our region, and I think, Elizabeth, you kind of touched on it, housing was one thing that was very important. If we want to see population growth in central Indiana, we need places for people to live. Mayor Dan did a very good job setting it up and saying, we're there, we're getting there, we're on the cusp. We've seen some counties maybe blipping in and out with the preliminary data on, are we kind of achieving that? Are we going to start seeing the growth? But if we don't have places for people to live, it is not possible to have growth. So that was a critical cornerstone, really, of our Ready Plan. And as we've gone through it, we do have a preliminary list. We're going to start working very closely with the IDC on getting those projects through and approved, hopefully, in the next few weeks here. But in what we're looking at, we have just under 1,000 housing units that we hope to be able to support through the Ready program, which is substantial. Now, it doesn't come anywhere near the 3,000 units that we actually received as far as people who initially actually applied for the program saying, this is what we want to do. We simply don't have enough funding to be able to support it all. There's never going to be enough funding, of course. We certainly are hopeful that there's going to be programs that continue into the future for us to continue to meet those goals. But there is definitely demand. There is interest. And if we can continue to work on it and find ways to fill those gaps, I think we're going to see some great successes.
Follow up for you, Trevor, from the audience. How will the Central Indiana Regional Partnership encourage Ready grantees to keep their projects spending in the region and in the state?
That's a really good question, actually. So I don't know that there's anything contractually binding them to continue spending specifically within the region. We could look at that, though, actually. That's not a bad idea. There may be something through the state. I haven't actually gotten that far along in the process, and if it's the exact answer right now. But a lot of this that we are seeing, I mean, we're making sure that the local project leads are following their procurement standards. If we're working with local governments, of course, there are oftentimes things and contingencies in their contracts to make sure that they are spending locally, keeping those dollars within the state. So that's really what we would hope to see.
Workforce question. Elizabeth, I'll throw this to you. Anyone can jump in on this. With manufacturing jobs increasingly requiring advanced training, how do you plan on providing opportunities for good paying jobs that maybe don't necessarily require a college education?
So big shout out to Ivy Tech. Where are my Ivy Tech people in the room? So at the State House, I always told people that our Ivy Tech here in Delaware County, Henry County, is the best in the state. It's because they are. They have done a phenomenal job in East Central Indiana in working with our manufacturers and developing training programs specific to that company. So Magna jumps to mind, Mersix jumps to mind. They're constantly talking with our manufacturers in the community and saying, okay, how can we help you build a certificate that is specific to what your needs are? We have a fantastic program here in Delaware County called the JUMP program that Ivy Tech has had a huge portion of that program. And that is helping people who are currently behind bars get out and get workforce opportunities and an education at the same time. So not violent offenders, but people that are in there, they're awaiting trial because they haven't paid child support. There is a program that is being coordinated through the probation area and some businesses in our community and Ivy Tech to say, okay, we're all going to work together. If somebody misses work one morning, the probation officer is going to reach out to them and say why. Ivy Tech has done a fantastic job with wraparound services for those people. So I give the example because they've shared it with me and there are no names. In the last year, someone didn't show up to work and they didn't want to call the manufacturer that they were working for to say why they weren't there, but they were comfortable sharing it with the probation officer, which was my girlfriend slash called my tires last night. I couldn't get there. So Ivy has a fantastic wraparound program to say, hey, we're going to come and get you and we're going to help you get new tires put on and we'll just take it out. Or they will have someone that is ready to start work, but they don't have steel toed boots. And so Ivy will help them with the wraparound services. I give a huge shout out to them for making sure that those advanced manufacturers in our community have the workforce base that they need based on exactly what it is that they need in that specific area. They've got a couple of pieces of machinery that are scaled down versions of what are used in our large manufacturing organizations. So you go to Ivy and you learn how to do it on a scale model, and then you're ready to just go right into the company and start your job.
Jeff, the role of education, is it changing? I mean, as you look, and the assets that East Central Indiana has with Ball State and Taylor and Earlham and Ivy Tech, I mean, a lot of educational institutions in the region, how will that impact workforce development, the talent pipeline going forward?
Well, it certainly has changed since the time I was in college. And Ball State, I think, for many years has been on the forefront of anticipating and responding to those challenges. What I like to say is if you're in the higher education business and you're simply delivering content, you're going to be out of business very quickly, because young people today, all of us can today readily access all of that content that we need on our cell phones within a matter of minutes. So what we do very well at Ball State is provide educational experiences. That is, in the classroom, in laboratories, in a variety of experiences. LaFay mentioned immersive learning. We provide many opportunities, diverse opportunities for our students to apply the content they've learned to the opportunities and responsibilities and challenges that they'll face after they graduate. And so we have a variety of programs that do that. And I think that's why so many of our graduates are sought out by companies all across the state and all across the country, because our students come prepared with the skills and the work ethic that's needed in business and industry today.
What are the future industries, maybe new industries, that East Central Indiana can target? My guess is manufacturing will continue to be very important, advanced manufacturing using technology and innovation. But I hear, you know, talk about eds and meds, the educational institutions, the healthcare system, cybersecurity. What are the kind of those industries that folks can look out and see maybe coming to East Central Indiana?
Well, certainly I'll just respond real quickly. The healthcare one is quite substantial. I see Scott Rutledge, the Dean of our College of Health, who is here. You know, the healthcare needs in East Central Indiana are pretty significant. And if we're going to continue to be attractive to business and industry, we need to do an even better job of supporting health outcomes for our friends and neighbors all across East Central Indiana. And that's why we're proud at Ball State to work in partnership with other healthcare providers throughout the region. To work collaboratively to try to address those population health challenges.
Anybody else on future industry?
Yeah. If you look at the makeup of our current industry mix in East Central Indiana, about 19% manufacturing. But if you look at the eds and meds, which was again another critical piece and really a pillar of our regional development plan that we used as the backbone of our READY submission, it's about 27.5% of employment in the region. And I think there's just such an incredible opportunity there to find better ways to create more of just a more robust pipeline to be able to feed those institutions and make sure that we are focusing on that. Another thing that I think is worth mentioning is that we are at the regional partnership, we're going through a cluster study right now, an analysis to look at, you know, what are we really good at? What are the things that you know, we should be swinging at? But what is the future? What is that missing piece? Because there's, I think if you ask 10 different people, you get 12 different answers. Mm-hmm. The saying goes, however you want to say it. But there's a lot of different potential that we have right now. And I think the region is really at a place where we're in that conversation. We're having that conversation now. We need to figure it out. And we've got a real opportunity here to really keep the gas pedal down, keep the momentum, figure out what it is, and go after it.
Go ahead, Mark.
I would just say the skilled trades. Really matter. I mean, it's really tough to fix a housing challenge when you don't have the skilled trades to do the work. And so I think that's real. And then just on maybe the other end of the spectrum are all the technology oriented jobs, whether it's AI, cybersecurity. They're just in such high demand and they're very technical, very unique, and they require a different kind of education to be really ready to attack the challenges that are at hand.
Yeah. Go ahead.
We know in your industry as well, the nature of media is changing very rapidly. we have a variety of programs in our College of Communication, Information, and Media that are helping to prepare our students to lead that continued evolution of responsible media and communication.
When you talk about AI, robotics, automation, there are positives that go along with that, but there are also some negatives workforce-wise. As you look at technology, emerging technologies, are there things being looked at here in terms of the impact here in East Central Indiana and things that can be done to mitigate that or leverage it for positive things?
Sure. So we've been talking about that for years in East Central Indiana because, again, in the 70s, we were flush with manufacturing jobs. You know, Warner Gear, Chevy ran three shifts constantly and all the ancillary companies that fed into those. So we're talking about that all of the time. But the conversation is where you might do away with a repetitive physical position and it might be replaced with AI, you're still going to have to figure out who's going to run the AI programs. So we're always talking about that. Something else that I want to go back to, the cradle to career that we're doing here, and then a huge shout out to NC City Schools for already employing career coaches in there. You know, the legislature has determined that all of our kids need to have a pathway when they're walking out of high school. It's, it used to be you were going to go into a skilled trade, you were going to go on for a higher education position, or you were going to join the services. And in one of those capacities, we have too many kids that are walking out of senior year or before, and they have absolutely no idea what they're doing. So I'm really excited about partnering in our community here with NC City Schools, noting this, that those career coaches are having those contacts with the students and not necessarily determining, hey, sophomore year, we know you're going to do ABC, but maybe saying, oh, we know you don't want to do this, and helping to kind of winnow it down to an area of interest for them. And I love the cybersecurity, shout out to the Ball Brothers Foundation for bringing us a conference on that and talking about the potential for Delaware County and Central Indiana to engage in that. I can remember talking in the IT perspective to my son, who's now 17, 10 years ago, you're not going to have a job playing video games. Thanks, President Merz. You just blew that right out of the water. Now you can make a lot of money. Right. Now you can make a lot of money learning how to play video games. Yeah. And my son, when I told him about that, he said,
Yeah, that's good. You mentioned Muncie Schools and President Burns. If you could give us a quick update on Ball State's role in transforming the school system, because a few years ago that wasn't necessary. Everybody didn't think it was a great idea, right? It was a bit of controversy involved there. How have things turned out, and what's the impact when it comes to economic development and keeping and attracting?
Well, you're right. Not everyone thought it was a great idea. I remember very clearly the first conversation I had with Senator Eckerty at the time when he was serving. And when I shared with him what we were contemplating doing, he said, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard. Run as far from it as fast as you can. But we've been grateful for the opportunity to partner with our friends in the Muncie Community Schools. And as a result of the outstanding leadership and the continuing dedication of the teachers and staff, we're now delivering on the promise of providing an excellent educational experience for every child in Muncie. The new school board and the administration have balanced the budget every year. They've actually produced surpluses that have allowed them to invest more than $60 million to renovate virtually every building in the district. Teacher compensation in just the first 6 years of the partnership has increased 40%. In the previous 10 years, there were no raises in 10 years. It's increased 40%. And of course, that has enabled us to recruit and retain outstanding teachers and staff who really are the ones delivering on that promise. Now the outcomes that we're starting to see in terms of graduation rate and test scores are also starting to improve, but it's going to take a sustained effort from the community, from our partners in the Muncie Community Schools to finally fully deliver on that promise. So we're hopeful, but a lot of work to do.
Yeah, Mark, from a private sector, from your company standpoint, and others looking to locate or relocate, how important is that story? Is it public education?
Well, it's critical. I always say that our success is a direct reflection of the success of the businesses that we bank, and the consumers that we bank. You're either growing deposits or investing in the organization and needing loans. And with an unhealthy school system in this community, economic development was really just dead. I mean, I don't know how you attract someone to a community
when you have a problem with your primary school system. And so it's so exciting to be on the other side, where instead of it being a detriment, it's a catalyst and something that creates enthusiasm when employers consider investing in Delaware County.
Yeah. Don't know who wants to take this one, but it's an important one. And it's one I think that every region we visit, it's one of the questions that is asked, and that's early childhood education, child care, important economic development issues. This is from the audience. What is being done to build the infrastructure here when it comes to early childhood education, but also just child care?
So one of the byproducts of our partnership with the Muncie Community Schools is we received a significant grant from the Indiana Department of Education to support high quality pre-K programs that are now housed in or immediately adjacent to every elementary school in the city of Indiana, the MCS elementary schools. And as a result, we're seeing significant increases in those critical kindergarten readiness scores. We've also partnered at Ball State with the YMCA to convert the former Mitchell Elementary School into a really high quality daycare and pre-K program on the northwest side of Indiana. Because of that, because that work is so critical to the future success of all of the children when they progress through the school.
You see that as an issue in Marion. I think it's that way everywhere. As you look at that issue, do you see that as a big issue?
Definitely. Child care is, having young kids myself, I understand how difficult it can be to find child care. So we're glad to be partnering with Indiana Wesleyan, who's going to be taking on that project and actually building a new daycare to help us be able to create the solution for that.
So we've also looked at Ivy Tech. Ivy Tech has reached out to talk about establishing a child care center in our industrial park. And so we're still working on that. But wouldn't it be wonderful if where we have all of those workers being located right there in the feeder program from the Ivy Tech students, we would never lose the workforce. But you would also have that center that would be located near our industrial park. So we've talked about that as well.
Yeah, Trevor.
The interesting things that we're doing too, actually through the Ready 1.0 program. President Mearns, you stopped short of mentioning the talent collaborative here. Let me jump in on that one. It's the talent collaborative for East Central Indiana, where it's actually pulling together different resources related to the educational system. So even preschool and then K through 12 and then even beyond as people are getting ready or maybe retooling for different jobs. But we had $1.5 million that was carved out through Ready One that we put specifically into the early care and learning section under the talent collaborative. And we're able to actually, through that, hire up some staff that are going out into the region, meeting with the different daycares that exist. And this is all through the Ball State University Office of Community Engagement, and share the resources, because a lot of time it's you don't know what you don't know. And just making sure that people are getting up to the level that they need to be. They understand that the resources exist, and it may not be a brick and mortar investment, but it was our big programmatic investment through the Ready One program.
Yeah, Trevor, this one's for you. Regional cooperation, which has been talked about in the state for a long time. Some do it better than others. Some kind of go kicking and screaming, and it's not great. How would you assess collaboration in the region? Elizabeth, you can jump in too, but in the region, are communities, you know, communicating and working together to the level they need to be?
So when I was thinking about this, because I know, like, one of my notes, you know, to be able to prepare an answer for this, is regional collaboration is difficult was the word that I wrote after that. And there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It is a challenge. It is a more so an opportunity. It's something that we can continue to work at, need to continue to chip away at, and make sure that people understand that we have a lot more in common throughout the region than we do that sets us apart. I think that's a really important key when we're looking at this and thinking about the concept of regionalism. As we went through our Ready 2 planning process, we went to every single county. We asked them, what are your priorities? What's holding you back? What barriers could we remove that would really enable you to grow and thrive? We took everyone's responses, we put it all on a grid, and we found the four things that everyone aligned on. I mean, there's things like the housing issues, childcare, and support for families, just quality of life, kind of a basic area, critically important, obviously, to the development of our communities, making sure that there's amenities for people to thrive. And we took those different elements, and that's what we have put forward, and making sure that those things resonate with any project that we're looking at for Ready To or moving forward in our regional development plan, making sure that we're aligning on our goals so that everyone from all the different corners of the region can say, yes, I get behind that. And I understand the importance of that because I see that in my community as well. It's a tough conversation. It's difficult. But again, we have to keep chipping away at it.
What do you see?
So I have the vantage point of wearing the state legislator hat as well as a local economic development organization hat. I know what the intent of Ready was, having served in the body and listened to testimony. And the goal of Ready, which is phenomenal, by the way, my team and I were at an event last year, and there was a site selector there who said, Ready, this is it. This is what you need to be doing. You're the only state in the United States that's doing this, and we hear you're doing round two. And I said, yes, we are. And that person was like, that all the site selectors are talking about this. You're investing in your state. So that translation of quality of place and quality of life, you know, when you're looking at a potential company coming in, we're all pretty much going to give the same amount of money to them, tax abatements and incentives to come in. But it's the quality of life and quality of place that's going to actually have somebody who's going to run a company want to move into your area. So we chatted about that at the State House. But Ready is meant to be transformational. It's meant to be transformational. And so I think that going forward, boots on the ground and seeing what the needs are of all of the communities versus what the intent Ready was, I don't know that we're marrying that up. And this is around the whole state. I'm not talking about just our district. But I think that you're going to move the needle. Again, it's going to have to be someplace that companies will want to locate to and live. And so I see the need for our rural areas to have assistance and help. And I'm going to translate into the legislature what I see, and how do we make that be possibly a different pool? Maybe that's more funding in OCRA. So Office of Rural Affairs, Community mm-hmm. Rural Affairs, because there's just such a tremendous need out there, but the needs are very different. And so to try to have it be under the one umbrella of Ready, boots on the ground, it's been very difficult because the needs are so very, very different. I think that, you know, everyone that was in our region would agree that Ball State's project is very much a regional project. There are students from every one of our regional counties that attend Ball State. Every one of the counties in our region have people that work at Ball State. So again, it was a challenge because the needs are just so very different.
Mm-hmm. President Mearns, I had you open up things. I'll have you close things here. Look in your crystal ball. Okay. 10 years from now, when we're doing Engage East Central Indiana, what is Muncie and East Central Indiana going to look like? We talked about a lot of projects, a lot of big projects, a lot of big ideas. What do you see this community and this region looking like 10 years down the road?
Well, as I said, I'm very optimistic that it will look even brighter than it looks today because of the assets that we have, because of the support that we receive from statewide funders, including the General Assembly. We're very fortunate that the state budget allows us to invest in higher education and in Ready and a variety of other programs. So what I think you'll see is, the mayor cited earlier today, those population growth statistics. I think that is one statistic that you'll continue to see multiplying growth in the future. I think you'll see what we heard earlier today that Mark shared at breakfast, is that Ball State and the other institutions have helped convert their towns or their cities to being vibrant communities because they're attracting young people, they're attracting and supporting businesses, and that we're growing because of that synergistic partnership between the, I like to refer to Ball State and the higher education institutions and the hospitals not as anchor institutions, because in a dynamic, ever-changing world, you don't want to be an anchor. These are institutions that we're fortunate to have all across the region that are the catalyst for growth and economic vitality and quality of place and quality of life. So I feel very optimistic that in 10 years we'll be not just having lunch, but maybe shopping, popping a couple of champagne corks.
Very good. With that, how about a big round of applause for a great panel? Thank you all very much.
What a wonderful conversation. Thank you, Gary, and thank you to all of our panelists. Did an amazing job. Thank you to Secretary of Commerce David Rosenberg and the IEDC for the continued partnership on our event. Special thanks once again to our engaged series sponsors, CareSource, Indiana University, and Old National Bank. Thank you to Indiana Chamber of Commerce and our local media sponsors that Gary mentioned, Woof Boom Radio, TheMuncieJournal.com, and WMUN. And finally, a special thank you again to President Mearns and Ball State. Thank you so much. You made today a wonderful, wonderful day. Thank you so much. Someone at your table is welcome to take home the floral centerpiece created by local florist Normandy Flower Shop. You can wrestle over that at your table. Please enjoy the local treats from Lowry's Candies. I think it's the state of Indiana. Be sure to check out photos from today's event by Ball State University photographer Jordan Cordell at IBJ.com/events. We hope you found this afternoon's conversations and networking positive and look forward to the continued growth of East Central Indiana. Thank you for being here today. Tell me that I say we lose control.